Hello, welcome to the fourth Fund Fanatics podcast. My name is Gavin Lumsden. I'm editor of Investment Trust Insider. With me is Daniel Grote, editor of Citywire Funds Insider. And we're here to discuss what's going on in funds and investment trusts. And Dan, how are you doing? Listen, today's big news, we're recording this on the day that Shell, we've been talking about it in previous podcasts, you know, could it ever happen? It has actually happened. Shell, the mighty Shell, has cut its dividend for the first time since the Second World War. And I don't know about you, Dan, but this is an absolutely seismic event. And no one was really predicting it, although it was possible. And it's just left me really feeling really sorry for our listeners out there, for investors, income investors, who are, you know, where do they turn to now for a safe income? You know, the search for a reliable investment income is not a new story. We've been talking about it, we've been writing about it for 10 years since the financial crisis, when things were bad back then. And, you know, things have been getting tougher and tougher. And now it just seems, with Shell doing this, you know, where do people go? What are you thinking?
Well, I mean, it's just a seismic event in the world of income investing, isn't it? I mean, you know, Shell hasn't cut its dividend since World War II. And, you know, we've had oil price crashes in the, you know, more than 80 years that there have been since it last cut its dividend. But this one has proved too much. And you're right, it has come as a shock. I mean, in one sense, it is not a shock because, you know, the oil price has absolutely tumbled this year. You know, stock markets are down as a whole as a result of the coronavirus pandemic and what that's done to company revenues as economies lock down. But the oil price has been particularly affected where there's been this problem of oversupply. There was this aggressive price war launched by Saudi Arabia. And in last week's podcast, we were talking about negative oil prices, you know, another historical milestone. And this week we have Shell cutting. And
clearly with oil going to a negative price, obviously the likes of Shell and BP, its UK rival, that's doing their finances a lot of harm. But, you know, yesterday, this week, BP actually lifted its interim dividend. And, you know, it's made the move by Shell all the more sort of, you know, shocking, because and you wonder whether BP will have to kind of, you know, reconsider and toe the line. I mean, the logic is impeccable. We were hearing from fund managers and investors, there was a massive debate going on whether, you know, companies should be paying, you know, you shouldn't pay an unsustainable dividend. And, you know, if oil's falling to a negative price or very low prices and your income is drying up, there's just no point in paying out something you can't afford. But it's just that, as you say, the decades of them through various crises, various downturns, they've managed to keep the dividend going. And now, finally, they've reset it. Obviously, there is a longer term positive here, you know, that if the company pays something it can afford, then it can actually grow. But right here, right now, you know, Shell, I think you know the figures better than me, but it was paying, well, about a fifth of the UK stock market income. Is that right?
Yeah. And I mean, not only is this of huge kind of historical importance, but just in terms of, you know, the quantum of money that's now been taken out of that dividend pool in the UK stock market. Partly as a result of all the cuts that we've seen elsewhere, Shell's portion of that payout was getting on towards a fifth, had it continued paying at the 47 cents a quarter.
So who's feeling the impact of all this? This is obviously the many shareholders, the direct shareholders in Shell, but also, you know, our readers who are investing through funds and investment trusts. There's the UK equity income funds we've talked about, but there's loads of funds, loads of global funds will be holding Shell, won't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, in a sense, it's unsurprising. I mean, it's the biggest company in the FTSE 100, and it's certainly the biggest dividend payer, and it has been for quite a while. So, you know, not only would you expect to see it represented fairly heavily in a lot of equity income funds that are paying out dividends themselves to their investors, but you see it in broader UK equity funds because it accounts for such a large part of the UK stock market.
Yeah, And Shell, it's funny how today, we're speaking on the day that it's actually happened, been announced. You know, it took a while for the Shell share price to start sliding. You know, I was doing a little calculation earlier on in the day. The market had been open for a couple of hours at that point, and it was down 3%, I think. And on our calculation, if this new quarterly rate is maintained throughout the year, that seemed at the time to be giving a 3.5% yield. The shares are now down 13%. Is that right?
Yeah, towards, I'm just looking at it now.
We're about an hour away from the market close on the day that's been announced. So, you know, the shares have slid and tumbled, and that yield will be going up. Any idea what they are yielding at the moment? And because they were, before the cut, they were yielding 10%, which is obviously sending a signal, a danger sign to investors that the market thought that yield, that dividend was unsustainable. But when I was doing a calculation, it had gone from 10% to 3.5%. But now it must be going, must be above 4% by now.
Yeah, I mean, if you're asking me to do a quick calculation off the back of that, off the top of my head, then I'm afraid I'm going to disappoint you. But I suppose
my point is that, you know, it's a massive shock. And for those people who are holding Shell and those people who are in the funds and, you know, some of their income is coming from Shell, there's less money coming in. Going forward, if you were to buy Shell, you're not getting a terrible yield. But I just wonder what you think how that as a share, how that compares with other stocks there.
It will still be yielding more than the broader stock market. I think that seems sort of fairly safe to say.
It is at least paying something. So many companies are just scrapping or suspending their dividends entirely. Shell is paying some money.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the yield across the entirety of the UK stock market, you know, that was around sort of 5% heading into this coronavirus crisis. That's probably going to fall to around 3.5% by the end of the year. And you know, Shell's cut will play a fairly big part in that yield going down. I think the issue with Shell, even on a yield that looks more sustainable than what it was trading on leading into this crisis, is that once you get sort of below the sort of 4% mark, you would then draw the comparison with companies like Unilever and Diageo, the sort of big consumer brands giants that are listed on the UK stock market, where there is that record of consistently growing those dividends. And they look more... That growth looks more sustainable and maybe less volatile than what you would be expecting from an oil major, just if you were going by what the oil market has been doing in recent years.
Yeah, absolutely. You're talking about those classic Unilever and Diageo. Yeah, they're sort of classic quality growth companies, aren't they? Defensive in their own way, but they have got growth in their underlying markets, however difficult it might be at times. You know, they're very diversified, very internationally spread, and lots of people are buying their wares. By contrast, oil giants like Shell, you know, they've been value stocks. They arguably were undervalued because they're in very difficult markets. You know, oil price wars and environmental concerns mean, you know, there's a real question mark over where their end market is going. Their main attraction was a high yield. That's now gone. Would you really buy Shell if it's yielding something like 4%?
Well, it's maybe a bit of a glib point, but if you look at companies like Unilever or Diageo, they're not selling stuff that's going to fall into a negative price. And obviously we've seen that with Shell, negative oil prices. They're probably, that's a product of the futures market, but it just highlights the extreme pressure that there is on that market. And that's led to the dividend cut that it's been forced to make.
Yes, and then so what about the impact on the funds? Because I look at the investment trusts, as you know, and there, you know, we've touched on this in our conversations already. But you know, quality growth seems to be maintaining its momentum, and the three trusts that have been highlighted by analysts at Numis Securities, you know, the UK Equity Income Trust as a whole. Have a great track record in paying dividends, and they all have these pools of reserves of money, revenue reserves, with which they can underpin their dividends. But you know, as with any sector, there's different types of trusts, and those trusts that have more of a quality growth approach, like Nick Train at Finsbury Growth and Income, and Troy Income and Growth, and Dunedin Income and Growth, you know, those are the three that are kind of that end of the spectrum, and they seem to be in favour at the moment, where anything that's been more value driven. Going for companies that are apparently cheap and out of favour, but offering higher yields, you know, those are the trusts and the funds that have more of shelf. And, you know, they're being punished again today. You know, it does seem at the moment that the funds and the trusts and the quality growth end of the arguments, you know, they're holding things that are arguably expensive, but they're being rewarded for it so far.
Well, and if you look at what's happening in the open-ended fund sector, absolutely, that you know, you have the same phenomenon where those funds that were looking for dividends from the more value sort of areas of the market, you know, they would be drawn to Shell, BP, banks. Those are the areas of the market that have cut dividends by the most. You know, banks as a sector are responsible for the biggest sort of chunk that's been taken out of the UK stock market, and now we have Shell cutting billions really from the annual payout if it continues for the rest of the year paying at the 16 cents a quarter level. If you look across the investment associations, UK equity income sector, Shell, BP, banks, that they are really big holdings. And you know, last week we didn't actually touch on it in last week's podcast, but that trade body, the investment association, has suspended the yield rules in that sector because loads of those funds are going to fail it. And those rules aren't particularly stringent. They just ask that funds yield 90% of the FTSE All-Share over 1 year and more than the FTSE All-Share over a rolling 3 year period. But given what's happened with dividends across the entirety of the stock market, it's more than likely that lots of funds aren't going to meet those requirements.
Yeah, that's a pretty weird situation to be in. As you say, their requirements were pretty lax at the beginning. You know,
Well, you're allowed to.
you can get away for it with 90% paying less than the market for a year and
Well,
still call
fine.
yourself an equity income fund. I mean, but you know, but over 3 years you have to. Yeah, but effectively they're not. There is no income, so there can't be equity income funds right now. But they are aiming to be in the longer term. I suppose they keep their name. But yes,
Well, and
it's
I
not a
guess
proud moment for those funds, is it?
no, and it's going over old ground again, I guess. But it just again, it's another highlight of the difference between open-ended funds and investment trusts and the dividend heroes that you write about, which aren't in quite the same situation.
They're not, and who knows what's going to happen? And you know, the investment trusts do have a structural advantage. It's not that the managers are necessarily better. In fact, you know, the managers will also run open-ended funds. It's purely a structural advantage. They can set aside some money. They don't have to distribute all the income they get, so they end up with these revenue reserves, which are very advantageous when dividends are being cut in the broader markets. The open-ended funds don't have that discretion, so you know, they just have to make the cuts. But yeah, I just go back to my point at the beginning. I'm just really feeling sorry for our readers and thinking, you know, that we, both of us, and all sort of financial journalists, we're just going to have to sort of, I don't know, redouble our efforts and in terms of how we cover income investing and just really, first of all, just recognise what a challenge. It is because you know, we're all, well, none of us are retired. I think that's the nub of the issue. I'm a bit older than you. I'm in my 50s, but I've still got a way to go, I think. And I'm not, you know, I still, what I mean is I really think of things in terms of growth, and you know, dividends are an important part of your total return, obviously. But I confess that I have to make an actual effort to think about things as an income investor, like that, which is I want to put my money into things which that generate a consistent and reliable and hopefully growing income, but certainly one that isn't cut when things go a bit wrong.
Well, I mean, likewise, I'm very much in the mindset of a growth investor. And I guess the best example that I had of putting myself into the shoes of an income investor was a couple of months ago. So my gran is selling her house to fund her care home bills. And so we were looking at how we use the money that would be generated from that sale. Obviously, that's been put on the back burner for now, given the coronavirus and the lockdown. But you know, I went on the Association of Investment Companies website to use their sort of dividend tool to build a kind of mock portfolio of how we could sort of generate the yield that would be needed to pay those fees. You know, if I was going back to that portfolio, and I will do now, I wonder how many of those trusts will still be yielding what they were at the time. And it just highlights the difficulty that there is at the moment in finding an income that is both meets your requirements and isn't going to be cut.
Well, that is I remember you saying this before, Dan, and yeah, it's just so much has been happening that it escaped my mind again. But that's I'd be really interesting to know how you get on, fund manager Dan Groats, looking after his the family estate. And yeah, what an important job you've got there, and it'll be fascinating to see how you get on. Actually, you know, it's a tough thing to be asked to do by your folks. But on the other hand, you know, as things settle down, we will pull through this, won't we? What's so frustrating and so damaging is this uncertainty. We don't know how long this crisis is going for, where we're going to pull through. But we will pull through, and you know, there will be businesses left standing. We hope, and the funds investment trusts will be there still, you know, looking to invest in them. So you're going to be buying. You've got an opportunity to buy some good things at the bottom, and maybe companies and trusts that are increasing their payouts, their dividend payouts.
Yeah, and I think that's where the debate will move, won't it? Because you know, we've had a lot of cuts, and we're going to get some more cuts, but. The debate will soon then shift to, well, how long are these companies going to stay off the dividend register? And when they do return, if they do, at what level will they return? Because and this is, you know, something that Fundsmith's Terry Smith has been writing about in the Financial Times today. You know, his warning, I guess, to income investors that some companies may well use this as an opportunity to, you know, rectify, I guess, in their eyes, what had become an unsustainable payout over the longer term. You know, not just dealing with the issue that we've got at the moment, where revenues have dried up and maybe will bounce back just as quickly as they disappeared in that sort of V-shaped sort of scenario. They will be looking at a dividend that has become more and more of a weight, where the cover has dwindled, and you know, may not get back to the levels they were paying for a very long time.
It's going to have huge ramifications, couldn't it? Because the UK stock market is known globally, internationally, as a higher yielding stock market. You know, FTSE's been yielding about 4%, hasn't it? And that's about double what the US market yields. They're not so into their dividends in the home of capitalism.
Well, that's something that David Stevenson was picking up in his column on both our websites this week. You know, that if you compare the American stock market to stock markets in Europe and over recent years, you know, there's only been one winner, and America, of course, and Europe's, I guess, you know, what Europe can lay claim to in the absence of, you know, those kind of rip-roaring rally, is its record of generating dividends. And without that, you would have really struggled to make a return on most of the sort of major European stock markets in recent years. So if that goes, that really is a key flank, certainly of the UK stock market in particular, a key flank of its attractiveness to overseas investors. And, you know, obviously it's been a stock market that has to some extent been shunned by those overseas investors in over the last 3 to 4 years, largely as a result of the Brexit vote. We sort of started to see an amelioration of that kind of sentiment towards the UK with the election result at the end of the year. But, you know, if dividends go for a long time, then it's a struggle to see why overseas investors would want to have UK shares in their funds.
Oh, that general election seems like an awfully long time ago now, doesn't it? Exactly. That whole kind of, I've repositioned my pension, talking about your personal anecdote about looking after your the family finances. Many people, I expect, I repositioned my personal pension up the ante on UK trusts after the election, and yeah, absolutely paying the price for it now because they've all been spanked by the crash that has hurt the UK stock market particularly hard. But just picking up on your point there about overseas investors, you know, not liking the UK market, maybe looking elsewhere, you know, does that mean, you know, we're thinking in terms of our listeners and what they might be thinking about where they could go and do with their money, you know, do UK investors need to be thinking more about investing overseas outside the UK as well? Because, yeah, I go back to my point, you know, we've been focusing on shares and equities because we're talking about Shell. But when I, you know, say, well, where do income investors turn? It's because, you know, over the past 10 years, you know, all areas of investment, all asset classes have become pretty challenging, if not unattractive. You know, we've seen property as an asset class is a good area for income investors. But at the moment, because of the similar reasons to Shell and cutting its dividend, you know, we're going through to this recession. Companies are struggling to pay, tenants are struggling to pay their rents, all of them. And so we're seeing real estate investment trusts, you know, beginning to suspend or reduce their dividends. So that's property, you know, is problematic for now. We look to bonds, well, government bonds. I mean, there's a bubble, a double bubble brewing in those. The interest rates, their coupons are absolutely tiny because of the fall in interest rates, and then the government's printing money, issuing more and more bonds. So the kind of the most supposedly creditworthy government bonds have been unattractive for a very long time. And as a result, people have been putting more and more money into riskier junk bonds, junk corporate bonds, high yielding bonds. And with, again, this an economic downturn that we're about to go through, you know, that there's a spectre of lots and lots of companies, particularly in the US, you know, leveraged companies who've borrowed too much money, whose business is now falling away. You know, they're staring down a barrel, and you know, bond defaults are going up as well. So again, that's another source of income: bonds, property, equities, all looking challenged. Where do you go? Now, it's not all bad, it's not all bleak, but it does make you think. You know, one kind of broad response to this is that if things are challenging in the UK, yeah, maybe I need to look globally, look overseas, and just have a, you know, maximum, throw a really wide net around the world and see what on earth is there out there that can help me out.
Well, I guess one of the reasons why UK investors might not have done that previously is that the yields on overseas markets really kind of struggle to rival what we have over here.
Yeah, and there's a currency risk if you invest outside. You know, currencies fluctuate, and that complicates the return you may or may not be getting.
But that, you know, that argument over yield, well, that's not quite the same as it was before the crisis. Now, you know, if the FTSE All Share falls to a 3.5% yield, then it doesn't have quite the lead over some overseas markets that it once did. So I guess the question you're then asking is, well, are UK dividends going to rebound quickly? In which case, you know, now would be a good time to be buying. If they're not, maybe then you do. You look overseas and you try to diversify your income. I mean, in terms of, it would really take a bit of a cultural shift, I think, and a shift in, a shift in money. In the sense that if you look at if you look at the open-ended fund space, where investors are generating income from equities, it's really geared towards UK equities. You know, that's a really big sector. Global equity income, much less so. It's because of that disparity in the yield between the two.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's the same thing in an investment trust. I think there's half a dozen of global equity income trusts, at most handful, and there's well over 20 in the UK equity income grouping. I tell you, though, looking overseas, Asia is an area, is a market that's being sort of flagged up, mainly by managers of Asia equity income funds and trusts, it has to be said. But yeah, there is an argument. You know, Asia broadly is a growth market because of the demographics, younger populations, and emerging market status, etc. But actually, it's not quite as simple as that. And some of the economies are getting more advanced, and also they've been, you know, more recent this year, they've been hit by the very same coronavirus pandemic, but they're first into it and possibly the first out of it. So, and in countries like Japan, you know, which is not an emerging market, obviously very advanced, developed markets, you know, there's arguably a dividend culture growing there as well. So, you know, nothing is straightforward. All of these markets have their drawbacks, their potential dangers. It's not risk-free investing in that part of the world, but as a source of capital growth and income as well, they are looking interesting. And I think it's probably an area to think about our coverage that we're going to be looking at a bit more in future.
Yeah, I think we will, and investors will, won't they? I think that's, you know, this has happened with UK dividends, so we need to look at where you can get them elsewhere, or whether they're going to recover in the UK.
Well, on that note, Dan, let's leave it there, because plenty of food for thought, and we'll doubtless come back to this topic again. It's a huge challenge. Where do you find a safe income? We've just scratched the surface. Let's give it some thoughts, and let's meet up next week.